we aim for 70% conversion, right? That's kind of our goal is, you know, if we get
it as a booked appointment, is that what you consider a conversion?
Booked appointment, and then for some firms, it's signed retainer.
Welcome to the High Performance Legal Entrepreneur Series. My name is Adam Arkfeld, an entrepreneur, marketer, and seeker of high-performing habits, tips, and strategies. Each week, I'll bring to you an elite performer, a legal expert, or simply a strategy to help you see and follow the path to personal greatness in your firm and life. Thank you for joining us today. Now let's get started.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the High Performance Legal Entrepreneur Series. My name is Adam Arkfeld. I'm your host. I'm the president and founder of Prevail Legal Marketing. And today, my guest is Maz Gorban, Executive Vice President with Alert Communications. They are the largest call center in the country. A little background on them, founded in 1965. They're a legal-only call center specializing in call intake, retainer, and mass tort, class action services for law firms, marketing companies, and mass tort organizations. And they were recently acquired by Nexa, which we're going to talk about in this conversation. But Maz, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Great. Why don't you just start by telling us a little bit about you and your background and then your role in the company with Alert?
Yeah, sure. So I am the EVP at Alert Communications. I started in December 7th. Which is Pearl Harbor Day. And I always hope that that's not predictive of my tenure here. But I did start in December. You know, my background is I've spent about 25 years in management roles, primarily working at either call centers or BPOs or technology companies. I have an extensive software background also. In all of the roles I've had, one of my primary, if not my primary market, has been the legal industry. In fact, right before I came to Alert, I was head of global services at Abacus Next, which is one of the largest providers of practice management software for the legal industry. And so I've lived and breathed lawyers for a real long time. I also come from a family of lawyers. There's six lawyers in my family. I'm the black sheep for not being a lawyer. So I'm just surrounded. It's probably the best way to say it. But I spent a big part of my career working for public organizations and then also private companies. And I'm just excited to find another way to interact with attorneys.
Great. Deeply entrenched in the legal industry.
I really am.
Excellent. So I did a brief overview of Alert Communications, but why don't you tell the audience a little bit about the business, what you think your key differentiator is, and then also, you know, touch on the acquisition that occurred early last year.
Sure, absolutely. So Alert Communications, we've been around for decades. The company was founded by Kim Starr, who left the company in December and retired after selling the company in January of 2020. I still talk to him. If he's not golfing, he's in Maui. So far, it sounds like it's going good. He's very happy. But as part of him moving on to retirement, the company that acquired him, Nexa, started a process to identify a successor for him. And I was recruited out of Abacus Next to come over and take over for him as head of Alert. You know, Nexa is one of the leaders in call center and technology-enabled services for home services. And they're backed by Sunstone Partners, which is the private equity firm that owns both of us. You know, it's been a great experience. You know, the Nexa team, they were a partner with Alert for years. So Kim and at the time our CEO, Parker Davis, they knew each other really, really well. They had worked together on projects and clients, and it was really kind of a family buyout to a degree. You know, they had a great relationship. And so, you know, the acquisition happened and then COVID hit, you know, they didn't really get to come together, you know, because of COVID. So that kind of delayed the integration for a little bit. But starting with me coming in and some other key hires, we've started kind of pushing the integration of the companies together and trying to realize the consolidated vision that Nexa originally had for why they acquired Alert. You know, the primary acquisition reason was very specific. They wanted the best legal intake call center in the market to round out their kind of portfolio. And they loved that Alert had a great brand name. They loved that we had really loyal customers, loyal employees, and we had, you know, a really good reputation in the market. And so for them, it was a pretty easy decision that we were going to be their first acquisition as part of their strategy of creating a larger portfolio of offerings for the SMB and medium-sized market. And so, you know, I'm focused on growing Alert's business, but I'm also focused on working with my counterparts at Nexa to further integrate the organizations and then to identify new products and services that we can offer to our legal clients.
That's excellent. And so you mentioned the brand, the people, you know, just the reputation of the business. And can you talk a little bit more about what you think is the company's key differentiator? I mean, you know, there's a lot of options out there for attorneys. What do you think sets Alert apart?
Yeah, you know, one of the good things about being new to Alert is I got to come in with a, you know, real fresh set of eyes. And I spoke to a lot of clients. I even spoke to some clients who had left us recently, just to get a sense for, like, you know, what didn't work, what did work. But ultimately, you know, there was a theme that I heard over and over again, which is, you know, we use Alert because when you answer the phone, you sound like an extension of our firm, right? We feel like you represent us well. Your agents are well trained. They make an effort to connect with the caller, and they make an effort to be empathetic to the caller. You know, Kim Starr, one of my first conversations with him after I started, you know, there's some overlap between us so that we could kind of, he could help ramp me up. And, you know, he used to say to me over and over again, he's like, you know, Moz, when people are calling a law firm, it's never good, right? That phone call is never for a good reason. It's always a bad reason. And, you know, one thing that he learned in all the years of doing legal intake was that, you know, when people call in and they're in a tough situation, if the person on the phone sounds like they don't care, they're not empathetic, that helping that person isn't important to them, they're not going to sign with that firm. They're going to move on. And we do extensive training, and we really go out of our way to score our agents on their ability to be genuine and to be empathetic and to take just a little bit of time to connect with the caller and understand what they're going through. And, you know, we try to be reasonable about it. You know, our business is obviously by the minute. So, you know, we don't want to overdo it. You know, we want to be conscious of our clients' budgets. But most of our clients say is that when they come back and they listen to the call recordings, they can hear the person calling in being stressed. And then by, you know, a minute or two into the call, you can hear their stress levels come down. And then they've made up their decision. This is the firm they want to do business with. And so we're very happy and proud that we've been able to develop a culture within the company where that's important. So that is, to a degree, the Alert brand is that, you know, we just are going to represent you in a very professional way. The second thing that's, you know, been a real value proposition for us is the fact that, you know, we're kind of at the tip of the spear when it comes to the technology options that we offer our clients. You know, some firms, you know, it's really, they want basic services, you know, answer my calls and route them. But the reality is that as more agencies increase their tech stack, you know, they're using a practice management system, they might be using a marketing automation system, maybe they have something like Salesforce as a CRM, that kind of interoperability, you know, that they want, having us be an extension of their firm isn't just the person on the phone. It's also our ability to accept data dynamically from their website. It's our ability to push real-time call results back to them for ROI analysis. You know, those are really critical elements. They're making significant technology investments in these other products. And so they really need us to be able to sit on top of that and work well with it. And we have made really significant investments the last 5 years to be really at the forefront of that interaction. And so that's a benefit that firms get from us. And also by extension, either their in-house marketing department, they really love that we can just plug right in, or if they have a third-party marketing vendor that they're using for their campaigns, they really love that they can count on us to be able to plug right into their system. You know, when you add those two things together, it adds to kind of our third primary benefit, which is, you know, we have a really high conversion rate. You know, a lot of the firms and marketing agencies that use us, you know, they're looking for high conversion. And because, you know, our agents are well-trained, we're very empathetic, we're legal only. So they get really, really good at being able to do those intake qualifying questions. And we're just constantly able to deliver them a really high ROI on their investment towards their marketing. And you put those three things together, and that's why we're pretty much number one on the market.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much to dig into on those three things. I want to go back to the empathy piece, because we talk to attorneys quite a bit that are either looking to replace or augment their internal intake or just bring in someone new. And they have a lot of options in the market. They have, you know, they're bombarded constantly, or they do a Google search, and there are tons of call centers, but they're not all legal focused. And the empathy piece, I think, is definitely absolutely differentiator. I mean, all three of them are, but it's just huge. And I've listened, you know, we run ads, we listen to calls, we spot check them for QA. And I have heard people calling about divorce and just sounding so depressed that they're calling because they're about to go on the path to divorce their spouse. And your team is really, they are empathetic to that. They, you know, they say, sorry, I'm really sorry to hear that. That must be really hard for you. And I was really struck by that when I first started listening to the calls. And that is starkly contrary to other call centers where they are trained to be happy. They're trained to bring energy. They're trained to be bubbly because they're a receptionist. They're not a legal intake. And so if you hire someone that's not legal focused, you're going to get this version of someone answering that is not going to connect with the consumer. And I just think that that's critically important. And you mentioned empathy scoring, and I'm just sort of curious how you do that. Does each person have a score? Like, how does that work, or what does that look like?
So we have an internal QA team. We also use independent third-party vendors to score us so that we don't put our finger on the scale, right? And so we try to be, honest with ourselves on how we do on those calls. On the empathy scoring, it's really a lot easier than you would think, because the extremes stick out. When someone calls in, we had a caller once call in from a hospital bed. Like, I'm in the hospital, my legs are broken, I need an attorney. And, you know, it's easy if the caller's like, hi, how are you? Oh, you broke your legs. Great. You know, like, I mean, it just won't fit. I mean, so it sticks out. And so it's a lot easier than you would think. You know, we do survey our employees. We do, when we hire through the recruitment process, we will sometimes have them take personality tests because we have a good sense for, you know, kind of what Myers-Briggs combination works well for empathy. And our QA team will go through calls and they'll listen. And mostly it's about attentiveness, right? You know, the hardest part about being an agent is listening and also notating everything that you're getting. And that combination of being able to be attentive, acknowledge what the person's saying, and empathize with their situation, and yet still write all of the important call notes that the firm expects. You know, there's a reason why for a lot of firms, the people that do that are paralegals. You know, these are not entry level interns. You know, they're usually high quality professionals. And so we have found that there's a balance there that we have to train on. You know, we have to teach our people that, you know, you've got to develop a skill set of being able to on a moment's notice, relate to this person without dropping the ball on the documentation. And if we have agents that aren't successful at that, they usually don't work out. And we do manage to that. And so I think that's one of the advantages we have is that, you know, we're honest with ourselves. It's way easier for us to find people where this is natural for them. And we just have to get them really good at documentation versus trying to get people who are great typers and they're good on the phone, but they're just simply not, they can't connect. And so we try to get as much of that up front in our recruiting process as possible so that our QA team is really just, you know, twisting the dials to further, you know, motivate them and to help them improve, not make them something they're not. And so all of that put together helps us kind of create a roadmap of kind of how we improve your empathy scoring and you know, what are the key things we expect you to do to have successful calls?
Yeah, awesome. When you're talking about technology, so technology is sort of, it's obviously complex, you know, generally speaking, it can be a little bit vague. So if someone's listening to this or watching this and they're thinking, okay, technology, great. What are other companies doing that where there's a gap in their technology? And what are you doing where there's strength in the technology? And what do the differences look like for the firm? So if a firm is basically saying, I need a solution to take my inbound calls, and you say, all right, we have technology solutions. What is the real value benefit they're seeing there? And, you know, from a marketing standpoint, you know, we were talking about this before the call, you have fulfillment, which most attorneys kind of start with, right? They're like, you know, fulfilling on referrals or whatever. And then they might introduce marketing, but in between marketing and fulfillment is sales. And in my mind, you know, you kind of fit more in the sales area. It could be argued that you're marketing, but, you know, so if someone's hiring you, how does that technology and all practical purposes play out with an attorney? What does it look like? Can you just sort of paint that picture a little bit more?
Yeah, you know, it depends on where that firm is in their kind of life cycle. You know, when we get an attorney who's just looking for, you know, we call it virtual receptionist services, you know, oftentimes we're introducing marketing concepts to them. They don't have any kind of tech stack. They're not, you know, they might have an info at email and maybe a web page. You know, it's amazing how many of the firms we deal with, you know, when we sign them up, their name is, you know, their name at gmail.com. You know, they don't even have a domain. And so we've had firms come back, and when our teams implement our virtual receptionist services for them, we'll oftentimes start to present them with metrics that they didn't know about. Like, hey, here's how many calls we did. Here was your conversion. Here's how much you invested. Here's your ROI on that. And they didn't look at it that way. They were just like, I need someone to answer my phones. And so when we start to present them with kind of just the base metrics of how to view that qualification and conversion process, then it's amazing how quickly it turns into, wow, we're not very good at this, as in not alert, but them as a firm, like we're getting on, you know, why aren't we getting more leads? You know, why is my cost per lead so high? You know, and they start asking questions. And so, you know, we get a lot of referrals from marketing agencies, but you'll be amazed at, you know, how many of our clients will be like, wow, I'm not good at this. I need help. Can you recommend anybody? I mean, this happens fairly regularly. So for a lot of firms, we're kind of their entry into this process, right? So for them, it's from a technology standpoint, it's more the reporting and the introduction of kind of a metrics-based view of their spend, which kind of turns the light bulb on. And then you have kind of the second life cycle of a firm where you have a firm who's using agencies, right? They now understand, hey, we want to do lead gen, we want to scale, we want to generate cases. And so they'll be using third-party agencies to drive different campaigns. And that's really where the first level of interoperability really comes in, because we're dealing with now marketing professionals. And they are oftentimes using some sort of tech stack, right? They might be using Marketo or Pardot or Constant Contact for email outbound campaigns. They might be doing television ads. They're probably doing digital web leads. And so now their desire to be able to drive leads to us quickly that we can act on immediately. That's where the first conversation will kick off immediately. Like, okay, how can you integrate in with my marketing tech stack so that when I have a lead, you see it immediately and that phone rings right away? And so that's the first kind of touch point where, you know, the fact that there's almost no system out there that they're using that we don't have an almost out of the box integration with, right? So we've made the investments to develop our own API so that we can integrate quickly and efficiently with, you know, an Abacus Next or a Clio or anything that they might be using for practice management or what they might be using for marketing, like a Marketo or a Pardot or something like that. So, we can get in there and really take in leads quickly. And it's that kind of full life cycle, right? You know, the fact that we have the integration, we can report things back instantly, right? So, you know, they don't have to sit there and wait a week to find out if, you know, if they pushed us 13 leads, what was the lead, what was the call disposition for those 13 leads? Well, they'll know right away because when our systems, our agents update those calls, it pushes back to them dynamically. And they can basically in real time see the success of their outbound efforts. And so that kind of second, you know, part of the life cycle where they're using a marketing agency, you know, we can pretty much just come plug right in and just sit on top of their tech stack and give them kind of full lifecycle lead and qualification attribution, which is really ultimately what they want. Because they're all trying to prove the same thing, which is you gave me $100,000 budget to go out and get you leads, and I got you X number of cases, and here's your cost per case. They can tie that all back to what the work that we've done. So it's pretty critical, you know, value proposition for them. And then you've got kind of that third tier firm that we work with where they kind of have everything. They have an internal intake that does their own intake. They have an internal marketing organization that does outbound lead gen. They have multiple marketing agencies they're working on for specific cases, maybe just for fast tort. And so they'll come to us and they'll want us to really have a kind of buffet version of our services, right? Over here for my intake team, I need you to be overflow, right? They're going to handle it. And then I need you to pick up overflow. Great, no problem. And then the net over here on my internal marketing team, they're doing campaigns. We need you to plug in to our Marketo instance, grab digital leads, but can you do chat and text also? And respond to the things coming in from the website? Great, no problem. And then, by the way, we're doing this $200,000 television campaign for Paraquat, for a mass tort campaign. And this is the agency, and we want you to be the primary call center that takes the calls. Oh, and by the way, we're running the ads at midnight. So make sure your overnight staff can handle the volume. And so that's a real, you know, smorgasbord of offerings that we have to plug into. And luckily, we have the people and the services and the experience to do all of them well.
Yeah. And, you know, when we frame you as sort of a call center, it's easy for people to think that you just take calls, but you touched on a number of other things, you know, web leads being dynamically shot into your API. Did you say that you do chat and text? You also do chat and text services?
We do.
Yep. So can you just talk a little bit about, you know, web leads coming in and, you know, again, if they're running a marketing campaign, you know, whether it's MasterWard or just some other lead gen, those leads are flowing into the firm. They could be at a high rate. And typically my experience has been that firms will, depending on their level of sophistication, if they're just kind of like ramping up their marketing, might call them once or twice and then the lead kind of dies. Or if they're more advanced, they might have a more sophisticated system. But what are your options if people are feeding leads right into your system? What does that look like as far as follow-up, outbound calls, and then maybe more real-time communication like chat and text?
Yeah. So, you know, the one thing I didn't mention on the previous question, but kind of talks to the technology piece also is, and it's a good bridge to this question, which is, oftentimes, when we have someone who's at kind of that third life cycle of their adoption of marketing practices, is when they have their own intake team, they almost always have their own intake infrastructure. And what I mean by that is they've probably got 20 intake questionnaires that they've refined over years. We're able to use that content. You know, we're able to plug right into their system. And so oftentimes our speed to market for them is significant, because if they don't need to wait for us to potentially program all those intakes in our system, we don't have to do that. We can just use their system and plug in. We're able to get our agents trained up by their internal team really, really quickly, so that we can start taking calls from them right away. And so I'm tying that back to your kind of last question, in the sense that when we look at digital leads and marketing leads coming in, you know, it all comes back to what is their intake workflow, right? And so people who have a sophisticated workflow, they oftentimes have very specific intakes with lots of key questions, with key disqualifiers, and very specific call disposition reason codes, right? And they expect us to dynamically react to the leads that come in. And depending on the lead source, that might be from the website, or it might be from this call campaign, or maybe it comes in on this 800 number, you know, that drives a specific intake and a specific questionnaire and a specific set of reason codes that we're expected to act on. So oftentimes the tech stack is really just supporting that process, right? But in regards to the nuts and bolts of it, you know, we have a robust API, and we will work with the firm to get a two-way connection going between our API and whatever system they're using. And for our agents, it's really, you know, it's pretty robust. You know, if you have if you run a pay-per-click campaign, and you're feeding calls in or digital leads, right, web forms into us, and you're tracking that pay-per-click paid search campaign through your normal tracking process, we take that all in through our API, right? So you don't lose any attribution. And that's really the key point, is that when it comes to our system and it immediately pops into an outbound agent is, here's a task, here's a web form, call this person. You know, all of that attribution, all the way back to the paid search attribution that you're doing with Google, you know, we keep all of that through our workflow. And so when our agent gets it, it'll pop up on their screen, they'll make the call, they'll qualify it. And then based on the disposition of the call, when the call ends, all of that information, including everything tying back to the campaign information, will go back to the firm. And so, you know, their campaign metrics update, their ROI metrics update, and then we're on to the next call. So, you know, obviously if it's digital leads, we tend to make outbound calls. Sometimes they'll run pay-per-click driving telephone calls. Essentially the same concept. We know that if it's coming in on a certain line, we know that it's this pay-per-click campaign. And so we grab that attribution and then return it back when we dispose of the call. So that's kind of how we have things set up. And for the most part, it's worked well for our clients.
Yeah. Now, the third thing you talked about was high conversion rate. As any marketer knows, conversion rates vary. But how do you, you know, do you talk about that? Do you talk about what conversion rates you see in certain types of verticals, or is that more of a, you know, just talk a little bit about high conversion rate and what that means. And if there's numbers you can share, great, or if it's too variable, that's okay too.
I mean, you know, we aim for 70% conversion, right? That's kind of our goal is, you know, if we
get a booked appointment, is that what you consider a conversion?
Booked appointment. And then for some firms it's signed retainer. Right. And okay. So we're, you know, it is not uncommon for us to drive, you know, 60 to 70% conversion to sign retainer. You know, one of the values that we provide to our clients, which I don't think is immediately obvious to people, is that we probably have the most experience, more than their marketing agencies, on which lists and lead sources work. You know, when we work with an agency who will listen to us, we can get really high conversions, because we'll say to them, where'd you get that list? Who is it? Yeah. Wait, when are you running that ad? Well, you know, we've done probably 100 campaigns for that list at this time slot on that channel. And we can tell you that the best you'll get from conversion at that point is 40%. So maybe that's not a good time to run it.
Wow.
And yeah, I mean, we have a lot of experience on understanding because we get to do, you know, all of the aggregate qualification for all these different campaigns. And so, you know, we have a lot of insight. And so when we work with an agency that, you know, appreciates that, we'll often collaborate with them on what are the best things to do to optimize conversion on this campaign. You would be surprised how often our clients, their marketing executive or the head of the campaign at the agency, they'll be on the phone with our team every day going and looking at what happened the night before. And then it's a collaborative discussion about how do we optimize conversion. Sometimes it's alert, we want you to make this change in the question or in how you respond to these leads. But oftentimes it's us telling them, this isn't a good list, or you need to ask a different question up front to get so you get a higher chance of conversion. There's a problem with your web form. Like even sometimes we can go and tie it back to how they're presenting it from a paid search standpoint. And so we can be a very valuable partner in helping them optimize those campaigns. Luckily, most of the people we work with are appreciative of that.
Yeah, that makes total sense. It didn't immediately come to my mind that I would, you know, as a marketer, you kind of just think, oh, you know, we tend to have more knowledge than someone who's not a marketer. Not being arrogant, but it's just that's your job, right? But yeah, I can see how that value being passed back would be. I mean, you just have so much data, so much data.
Yeah, I mean, in a week, we might make 20,000 outbound calls to cold lists that were bought by 28 different marketing firms at, you know, 100 different law firms. You know, like we get to touch it all. And so we get a lot of actionable information and we try to share it when we can.
And you're probably calling the same list over and over, would be my guess.
Well, we will, like I said, sometimes we save them money because they'll come back and be like, hey, I want to run this campaign. And we'll look at the list and be like, nope. I mean, don't do this one. Go get a different list because your client's not going to be happy because that one doesn't convert high. And then the marketing guys are like, thank you. You're okay. I'm glad to hear that. Because we'll tell them, oh, yeah, we've called that list 7 times. Wow. And it takes 8 calls to get anybody on the phone and the conversion 30%. That's how much we'll know about it. And so, look, I mean, do we know every single list and exactly what's going to happen? We're not Nostradamus, you know, we're not going to, you know, be able to perfectly align with it, but we see enough of them to be able to at least tell you when it's going to go bad. and we know what they're in the business of. They're in the business of conversion. You know, we want them to keep working with us. We want them to be successful. So we'll tell them if a list is going to underperform for them. And it's very, I will give them credit. It's very rare that they are like, I don't care, call on anyway. It's pretty rare. Usually they're like, great, thank you. Let me go get something else.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, are there firms that are just like not a good fit for you? I mean, if you're kind of looking at, you know, clients that are coming in, prospects, or just, you know, just firms in general, is there a time when you're like, hey, you know what, we're just not the right fit for what you're looking for?
You know, I think I mentioned at the beginning of the conversation that when I started, I talked to customers, but also people we had lost for why they left. And I find that they tend to fall into two buckets. And the first is that, and you actually kind of touched on this too, which is some places are really, they don't want empathy. They really want happy and cheerful. They actually are looking for just receptionist services. And so because we're primarily an intake firm, there are companies that just struggle with firms that struggle with that. They'll say like, you know what, you're doing a good job, but why can't your agents be brighter or happier? You know, how come they're not, you know, a bucket of sunshine? And we try to explain to them, you know, well, here's our methodology. And sometimes they really, it's just not what they want. And we get it, you know, we're like, we're trying to represent their firm. And if that is the culture of their firm to just be bright and sunny, we don't always align well with that. And so we have had people leave and say that that's the primary reason. They just want a different tone, and we get it. And then the other reason that we tend to lose clients where they'll go in another direction is that they're not prepared to take on the volume of cases that we might send their way, right? Like they might bring us on and tell us to do legal intake. And then all of a sudden, you know, we triple their conversion rate on intakes, right? Or just not even maybe the conversion rate, we triple the net number of leads they're getting because now people are answering the phone after five and at 1 a.m. And, you know, and oftentimes they'll be overwhelmed with the number of cases. And then now they're in a difficult situation from an ROI standpoint because, you know, our costs are immediate. You know, we get them these leads and they incur the cost. But if the firm's ability to realize a return on that case is 9 months, 12 months, sometimes they just simply don't have the cash flow or they don't have the operational ability to kind of take on the upfront cost of all those cases coming in and to ride that cost out until they get the case is closing. In fact, that's been probably one of the signature issues during the COVID pandemic for everybody in our market is that all of the firms with the courthouses slowing down or closing, you know, it really crushed some of their cash flow because cases are taking longer and longer to close, and that created a crunch for them. And so firms sometimes just think it's just too much. They can't handle it. So oftentimes they'll dial it back. They'll dial back their marketing spend and that'll bring down their costs. We try to work with them to kind of help them get through rough spots. But sometimes they just don't have the internal ability to manage a larger set of cases. And that's that.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, you could be running marketing campaigns and like you said, calls are coming in after hours. You're missing the calls. You probably don't even realize you're missing them. I mean, a lot of the call systems, you know, you can go find reports, but like they're not in front of you all the time. And then all of a sudden you have coverage. And then all of a sudden more leads or more appointments are being booked, even if you don't change your advertising spend. So, yeah. Talk to you a little bit about what onboarding looks like for someone. I mean, you know, anytime there's a change to a core business process, it probably feels daunting. Feels like a lot of work. I was talking to someone recently where, you know, during our conversation, I said, hey, I need you to call Alert Communications before we work together. I believe they recently signed with you. And they said, well, we need to put together the intake questions. And I'm like, you know, they probably have those for you. This is all they do. They could probably give you them and then you could trim it or change it or whatever. So just talk a little bit about what the onboarding process looks like for someone coming in on maybe the most basic level. Because I'm sure it can get very advanced with integrations, but you know, kind of the more basic components of it.
Yeah, it's really pretty simple. I mean, we've gotten it down to the point where, you know, if you sign on as a client, we have a dedicated onboarding group. That's all they do. You know, one of the advantages of being the larger player in the market is that we don't have people with 10 hats. You know, when you're smaller, you know. The person who does the onboarding also does customer service, also does billing inquiries. You know, we have the luxury of having a dedicated team. All they do is onboarding. They're, you know, the best people that we have in the building for onboarding, that's their job. We don't distract them with anything else. And so they're pretty good and they're really fast. And because we've made the technology investments and we continue to make the technology investments, you know, often cases, you know, client can come in and say, you know, it's a Tuesday and they say, I want to run a campaign Friday night and TV ads on CNN. And we can have everything in place, tested, ready to go by Friday morning. And that's even with some of the key integrations, you know, because we built out of the box integrations with some of the key systems. So we've tried to put the best people we have in those roles, surround them with technology that allows them to automate a lot of things so that it doesn't require a lot of people effort. You know, one of the other things that we've done is being that we're now part of a larger organization and we have you know, different opportunities available to us, being that we're owned by a large private equity firm. We're also able to expand our operations so that we have people who are working at night. You know, we have developed a kind of a follow the sun model where if programming requests come in during the day, when we're all asleep, somebody's working on them in the middle of the night because it's, you know, it's day for them on the other side of the world. And we've done all of that because it allows us to get all of those things done really quickly. And so the client comes in the next morning, it's already done. And, you know, that's a real key value proposition that we're trying to offer our clients. So onboarding can be a very, very simple thing. Obviously, there's exceptions. And then the more integrations, the more difficult it can be. But, you know, we also have a dedicated technical team where all they do is the technical integration work. And they're really good at it. So we're pretty proud of what we've built out on the onboarding side. But I want to touch to kind of the point you made, which is it kind of goes back to the same thing on the list where, you know, we have an actionable set of information on lists. Same thing with intakes. You know, we will oftentimes turn to a client and be like, are you sure you want to ask that like that? Because we have seen that question and it doesn't convert well. And like I said, oftentimes they'll listen to us, which is great. So yes, when a client comes and says, I'm doing this for the first time, I'm not even sure what to ask, we'll hook them up. we'll be like, here's some general questions that we've seen be successful and lead to high conversions. And then they'll modify them and we'll get them out the door.
Yeah. Yeah. We've done integrations with your technical team and they were super easy. Your API is very easy to work with and we're really pleased with it. Just stepping out of your specific business a little bit, just come from an industry perspective, do you see any challenges facing the industry right now that are a little bit more high level that you think people should be aware of, whether it be kind of mass tort or just, you know, more standard legal?
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely seen an impact across the board in regards to mass tort, right? You know, obviously, you know, because there's been such a backlog everywhere in regards to what cases moving through the courthouses, you know, we have seen firms become much more judicious about the campaigns they run. You know, they're more focused on high quality, less focused on volume, right? Which is good, you know, because it helps us drive, you know, a high conversion rate for them. But definitely it ties back to the kind of COVID's not over, but we're coming out of COVID, but there is a hangover still there in regards to revenue streams for the law firms and their ability to get settlements, right, moved through the court. And so everybody's kind of, you know, doing what they can to make sure they don't overcommit revenue on costs on the front end when they won't be able to push cases through on the back end. So I think mass torts a market where that has become critical. I can tell you that the marketing agencies that we're working with on mass tort, we've seen an uptick in inbound requests from new marketing agencies, even as some of the mass tort campaign volume has gone down. And the reason is that, some of the agencies are like, I've got one shot to show this client that I can do this well. I can't go with a call center that isn't going to give me a high quality conversion. And so we've actually seen an increase in inbound requests as people have been like, I can't take a chance on some place where all the calls are coming out of Vietnam. Right? So they're just like, I got one shot. I got to do it right. I'm going to call alert. And so that's kind of what's happened. So that's been good for us. We appreciate that. But we're, like I said, we're sensitive about, you know, kind of what's happening in the market there on the mass tort side, and which they're, by the way, starting to ramp back up again, but definitely towards the end of 2020, we definitely saw kind of a mind shift in the agencies and firms when it came to mass tort. The other thing that, I touched on this with you in a private conversation, but I want to bring it up, which is I am surprised, and we try to point this out to clients, that they really have to look at their intake and marketing within the construct of their vertical but their geography. The geography is pretty critical. And an example I'll give you is there's a lot, plenty of research out there that shows that, you know, if you get a digital lead in, your chances of converting it, if you don't call that lead within X number of minutes, your chances of converting it goes down. And that's a great, you know, aggregate metric on the value of speed to qualification on a digital lead. But what it misses, and what a lot of firms don't appreciate, is that that expectation is geographical. So, like for instance, in LA, you know, which is the largest, I think, market for personal injury, the average law firm, and I'm paraphrasing, so don't hold me to the exact number because I'm trying to remember it. But in LA, the average callback time on an inbound lead is 4 minutes for PI. And so, if you're a firm in LA and you're looking at your marketing, you can't just think about like, who am I competing with? You have to understand that in Los Angeles, if you want a lead, if you take 6 minutes or 8 minutes to get to that lead, it's gone. You're not going to get it. Whereas in, you know, San Diego, that number's 12 minutes, right? And then in Michigan, that number can be 4 hours. So they don't understand the geography concept of, you know, what is the buyer profile essentially, and what are the market expectations? You know, if you're in a key competitive market, even if you have everything right on the marketing side, if you're not driving metrics that are above the baseline average in your area, you're not going to get the ROI you want at all. And so law firms are often surprised when I will tell them, I'll be like, hey, you know, what services are you, you know, how are you managing your workflow? And they're proud that they get back to somebody within 20 minutes. And then when I tell them that in their state and in that city, their competitors, the average is, you know, 8 minutes. At first they don't connect the dot on that. And then that's when I'll tell them, so you're spending money to generate a lead for them. Because when you don't call back in 8 minutes, then they call the next person. And that guy didn't spend any money. His ROI on that lead is 100%. And you got nothing because you don't have an understanding of what your market situation is in that geography. And so that's one of the things that's really missing. At the national, larger multi-state firms, they get it, right? Because they have marketing teams that are hyper-local in regards to what they're trying to do. But most local firms that might be one or two offices in the same city, they really don't get it. They don't understand it. And they can sometimes be really misaligned with the market realities in regards to the timing and the speed at which you have to jump on these leads.
And so does Alert Communications, how do you manage that? I mean, is it every call is... every lead is called within 3 minutes, or how does that work for your team? As you're the ones competing with those other firms, basically.
So this is another one of the metrics that we're pretty proud of. You know, the industry average for live answer rate, which is, you know, somebody calls in, they get a human, you know, within three rings, right? Mm-hmm. The industry average is about 80%, maybe 85%, depending on, you know, volumes, but it's somewhere to 80, 85. But we really strive to be right around 93, 94%. And we spend the money to overstaff to a degree to make sure that we're delivering, you know, a live answer within that percentage to the best of our abilities. And that is one of the things we do to help drive that ROI for those law firms, right? Because we don't want them on hold, especially if they're in a city like Los Angeles where it is at 3 or 4 minutes. We can't have them on hold for five, right? Because they're going to hang up. And so, you know, we do a lot of things to drive value for our, so that in calls coming in those key areas, we, you know, we'll do put additional staff to make sure that, you know, calls in those areas where we know that the market requires a really high live answer rate, that's what we deliver. You know, we do, if somebody hangs up, we call them back. You know, if they talk to an agent and then we put them on hold to transfer the call and they hang up, we call them back. You know, we stay on top of it and we do all of that of kind of our standard offering. to be able to kind of help with that key metric. So that's a key part of what we do. And we manage to a real high live answer rate. And it's really been one of our key differentiators in the market.
And as a last question here, where do you see, what are some of the changes you see coming over the next couple of years, 5 years, evolutions? You know, I feel like I've been hearing about this like Google receptionist thing for the last 5 years. You know, what are some of the changes that you see coming down the pike that you're excited about, concerned about, or just changes?
I mean, we don't buy the hype on that at all. mostly because, like I said, you know, I could see a place where the need for virtual receptionists goes down, appointment setting, you know, initial call answer, transferring calls. Yeah, I could see technology, AI, taking a piece of that out. But that's not our market, you know, that we do that work, but it's towards the goal of legal intake and to a degree, even signed retainer. And those are just not things that you're going to pass off to AI. And the fact that it's legal, I'm pretty sure no bar association would ever allow it, right? I'm almost positive that there's not a bar association in America that would say, yeah, you can have a robot do your legal intake. So I think we're a little bit insulated from that reality because of the bar associations who I think rightfully do not want some robot qualifying a case and messing it up for a potential client. So that's number one reason that we're not too afraid of it. The other part of it is that as the world moves more towards digital sources for lead gen and higher interoperability amongst different types of media, the marketing agencies are it's going to become too competitive for them to put, you know, they're going to double down on, you know, high quality conversion services because it's so competitive. And I'll give you an example of that, which is also about tied to the pandemic, is one thing that a lot of firms and a lot of companies saw during the pandemic is their cost for pay-per-click leads went up because people weren't doing events, they weren't doing trade shows, they weren't doing, you know, the things that drive referrals, they couldn't see people face-to-face. And so their marketing dollars all started going towards Google pay-per-click. And so all of a sudden, you know, they went from paying $5 for pay-per-click to $75. Well, now that it's costing you that much, are you comfortable handing that off? You know, your cost per lead went up by a factor of 10 and you're going to hand it off to a robot and hope that it does it right? No. So I think what you'll see is when people have low converting lead sources that they know aren't going to convert high, or maybe they're top of the funnel lead sources, yeah, the robot will handle that. But once it comes to over a certain dollar amount, they're going to want high conversion, and you just won't be able to drive to that with an AI. Come with a tech background, I can tell you that, you know, they're not that smart, right? I'm not too worried about it. I do think that as things become more competitive and agencies are driving towards more interoperability between media sources, they're going to lean on us more, not less.
Great. Well, Maz, thank you for joining us today. Conversation was incredible. Learned a lot. And if people want to get in touch, if people are interested in Alert Communications, how should they reach out to the company?
Well, if you're interested in our services, you're welcome to go to our website, which is alertcommunications.com. If you are interested in speaking to someone about our services, just email me directly, maz.g@alertcommunications.com. And I'm more than happy to talk to anybody who's interested or connect them with an individual who can answer the questions.
Great. And that's Maz, M-A-Z.G, the last presentation. Yeah. All right. Thanks, Maz.
Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. It was fun. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.